Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Tending to your cardiovascular health requires much more than simply lowering your cholesterol. Maintaining heart health requires a combination of diet and lifestyle choices, along with a smart regimen of supplementation. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Heart Health Protocol, my personal supplement recommendations to reduce your heart risk. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com for details. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to DearHoffmanStore.com. That's DearHoffmanStore.com.
Welcome to Layla Weighs In here on Intelligent Medicine. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for downloading these podcasts. You can go to drhoffman.com and click on listen to get an index of all of the latest podcasts and archives. Lots of great topics there between Dr. Hoffman and myself. So it's all there. And please do read the articles. And if you haven't already, subscribe to the Intelligent Medicine newsletter. This is all at drhoffman.com. You can subscribe. It's free. You can unsubscribe at any time. It comes out once a week, somewhere around Wednesday, Thursday, sometimes Friday. And we thank you for patronizing us. Okay. So a few things I want to talk about. And I was really struck by this. And maybe you will be too. A ketogenic diet reduces body weight in patients scheduled for weight loss surgery. Eating a ketogenic diet. A ketogenic diet is a very low carb diet, as you know, which I'm a big fan of because it fixes a whole lot of problems in medical conditions everywhere from diabetes to weight loss to lipid optimization to, you know, the lowering of triglycerides, etc., to epilepsy, to possibly cancer, regression of some cancers. A ketogenic diet is wonderful. It's a wonderful medical nutrition therapy. And here, this particular article, they're saying eating a ketogenic diet for 4 weeks encouraged weight loss and improved micronutrient deficiencies in obese patients scheduled for weight loss surgery, a study reveals. I said to myself, no kidding. Well, yeah. It encouraged weight loss. On a low-carb diet, you're going to lose weight whether you want to or not, barring any resistance. If you have a metabolic resistance to weight loss, like if something underlying is not being addressed, like low thyroid, suppressed thyroid, or certain medications make it very difficult to lose weight. And that's something I would look at in an assessment. Now, coming back to this. So eating a ketogenic diet for 4 weeks encouraged weight loss and improved deficiencies, micronutrient deficiencies, that's vitamin and mineral deficiencies, in obese patients scheduled for weight loss surgery, a study says. Scientists assessed the safety and success of the ketogenic diet on 27 morbidly obese people. These are the folks that are in line for bariatric surgery, the Roux-en-Y gastric bypass, lap band, whatever is now the bariatric surgery in vogue, right? So scientists looked at 27 morbidly obese people and they assessed the safety and success of a ketogenic diet. Ketogenic diets, which generally restrict carbohydrate intake to around 30 grams per day, are very effective in lowering blood sugar levels and losing weight. They are. In lowering blood sugar levels, this is why it's an antidote to diabetes, to prediabetes, to metabolic syndrome, because we know a feature of metabolic syndrome, or syndrome X, if you remember. I hear the term metabolic syndrome used more often than syndrome X lately. But a feature of metabolic syndrome is impaired fasting glucose, high blood sugar levels. So, they have therefore, okay, the ketogenic diet, we know, less than 30 grams a day, actually a little less than 20. They looked at 27 morbidly obese people. They have therefore been the focus of on several recent studies investigating the ketogenic diet's efficacy in treating type 2 diabetes and improving other aspects of metabolic health. All of the patients, all the participants were due to undergo bariatric surgery. Dietary interventions prior to weight loss surgery are designed to reduce the size of the liver, improve the health of the organ, and reduce the risk of health complications of the surgery. Ketogenic diet can do that very well. Fatty liver caused by high triglycerides, right? High triglycerides are caused by what? Too many carbohydrates, sugars in the diet. That is the problem. In fact, there are more people in our country walking around with non-alcoholic related fatty liver disease. And the antidote could be a low-carb, a ketogenic diet. Low-carb and ketogenic, I am using interchangeably because low-carb means less than about 40 grams of carbs a day to get your body to go into ketosis. So the reason for this study is they wanted to see if a ketogenic diet prior to surgery can help to reduce the size of the liver, improve the health of the liver, and to reduce the risk of any health complications. When you're morbidly obese, your body is compromised, your metabolism, your health is compromised. You're not the best candidate for surgery. Therefore, these dietary interventions are often included as a pre-op prior to surgery. Now, a low-fat, very low-calorie diet is the standard pre-surgery diet. And this may include small quantities of whole foods or meal replacement soups or shakes. The researchers aim to investigate whether a ketogenic diet could be more effective at reducing body weight, liver size, and helping patients to comply well with a diet. As you know, a very low-calorie diet is very hard to comply with because you're hungry. But on a ketogenic diet, once it really kicks into gear, after four days to a week or so, that false hunger goes away. So, these 27 participants, they were assigned a four-week preoperative ketogenic micronutrient-enriched diet, which all participants adhered to. The Italian and French research team monitored a variety of health markers before and after the trial, including body weight, body mass index, BMI, size of the liver, specifically the left hepatic lobe volume, and micronutrient status, seeing if there were any deficiencies, and metabolic patterns. Here's what they found. There were highly significant decreases in body weight and reduced liver size, the researchers revealed. Highly significant. The participants also benefited from improved micronutrient status. Compliance in the diet was high. Like I said, when you really commit to it and stick to it, after the first week of carbohydrate withdrawal, sugar withdrawal, which is very real, the false hunger goes away. So compliance, they found, amongst these 27 individuals was high, and no adverse effects side effects were reported by patients who completed questionnaires measuring diet acceptability and side effects. While the research was only a prospective pilot study, the results are useful as they demonstrate a ketogenic diet could provide an effective alternative to low-fat, very low-calorie, pre-surgery dietary interventions. Now, the study was published in the journal Obesity Surgery. I didn't know there was a journal called Obesity Surgery. Obesity, yes, but Obesity Surgery. So this is all about bariatric surgery, the various surgeries. And this has become very in vogue now. I remember even back when I worked with Dr. Atkins in the year 2003, shortly before he died, tragically, there were many patients who came to us as the last stop before bariatric surgery. And many of them did succeed on the Atkins diet, a ketogenic diet in weight loss. Now, I am itching just to say, why not? You've already embarked on the ketogenic diet. You're saying there were no side effects, and we know there are no side effects. The compliance was high, and the compliance is high because hunger goes away. A lot of things get better. Energy improves. The liver is shrinking in size, back down to normal. Why not just stay on the diet? Forget bariatric surgery. And listen, I want to tell you, bariatric surgery, any surgery has risks of complications, so forth and so on. But now you are destined, after bariatric surgery, say gastric bypass, where they literally block off a portion of your stomach, so the stomach that can receive any food contents at all is about the size of, oh, maybe the palm of your hand. So you really, you can't ingest more than, several hundred calories, just a few hundred calories per meal. So basically, throughout the course of the day, you're not eating more than 800 calories. Guess what? Over the long term, on a very calorie-restricted diet like that, guess what's going to happen? You're going to have micronutrient deficiencies, including anemia. I see iron deficiency anemia a lot in my patients who have had bariatric surgery. And I never recommend bariatric surgery. And this is becoming even more and more popular with our overweight teenage population. Children are now more overweight than ever, destined to die earlier than their parents, at an earlier age than their parents. Imagine this generation of children. And the obesity rate continues to climb, despite all the evidence of, you know, the seriousness of the matter, the health implications of obesity. So why not just stay on this ketogenic diet? You feel better, you're less hungry, you're pretty much eating on demand, you're eating standard meals, your satiety cues have revealed themselves again, saying, oh, I'm full, I'm done eating. Wow, I probably don't even need to finish what's on my plate. I helped myself to too much food. These things happen on a ketogenic diet. It's true. People don't believe it before they embark on it. But why not do this and skip the surgery altogether? So the biggest complications of bariatric surgery, because now you're destined to a life of not having more than several hundred calories a day, a very, very, very low calorie diet, which is 800 calories or so. That's not sustainable. That's why even that Jersey diet, lose 40 pounds in 40 days, those of my clients who have done it and told me about it, it's a very low calorie diet. But guess what? You're not supposed to stay on that for longer than 40 days, because if you do, you're going to wind up with micronutrient deficiencies. So look at what this bariatric surgery is doing. You are now set up for a lifetime of micronutrient deficiencies. And they're taking supplements. Yeah, you could take supplements, but again, on such a low-calorie diet, other things start to happen. Remember, When Mother Nature thinks these are all the calories that are available, she will downregulate the metabolism so that you will survive, so that you will not perish. What happens to these folks who have had bariatric surgery after, say, a couple of decades? What happens with their metabolism? What is the impact on thyroid? What is the impact on other systems? You know, when we're deficient in certain micronutrients, it sets us up for other chronic diseases. We're talking about heart disease, we're talking about cancer primarily. You don't want to be deficient in your vitamins and minerals. So to those who are listening to these podcasts and thinking about bariatric surgery because you just feel like you will never get a handle on your hunger, I am here today to tell you that this is not true. You can get a handle on your hunger. I'm always administering among various diets for medical nutrition therapy, inflammatory bowel disease, cancer diets, heart disease, metabolic syndrome, all of these, a ketogenic diet as well, for the various reasons, for various medical conditions. I am here to tell you that your hunger can indeed be tamed. So, let me move on here. A new guideline from the American Academy of Neurology. Get this. Exercise has cognitive benefits in mild cognitive impairment. For patients with mild cognitive impairment, regular exercise is likely to improve cognitive functioning. An updated guideline from the American Academy of Neurology concludes, quote, it's exciting that exercise may improve memory at this stage, as it's something most people can do. And of course, it has overall health benefits. Lead author Ronald Peterson from the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. Now, you've heard me talk about the benefits in exercise in a variety of things, especially mood, mood disorders, and depression, a little less so in anxiety, but in depression, definitely, and now in mild cognitive impairment. Even the rock star neurologist, Dr. David Perlmutter in Naples, Florida, says aerobic exercise every day, brisk walking, upregulates BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor. This is great to improve cognition, to stave off cognitive impairment. So the new guideline says cognitive training may improve cognitive measures, but there is no high-quality evidence to support pharmacologic treatments to ease symptoms of mild cognitive impairment. We know that. We know that. Even drugs like Aricept and Alzheimer's, they don't work. The outcomes are not great. So, this new guideline by the American Academy of Neurology on mild cognitive impairment, which is endorsed by the Alzheimer's Association, was published in December in the journal Neurology, and it updates the ANN's 2001 guideline. So, to update the mild cognitive impairment guideline, Dr. Peterson and the guideline panel systematically reviewed the latest published articles on MCI, which is mild cognitive impairment, its prevalence, prognosis, and treatment. The data show that MCI prevalence increases with age. At 6.7% for ages 60 to 64 years, 8.4% for ages 65 to 69 years, 10.1% for ages 70 to 74 years, 14.8% for ages 75 to 79 years. You see the trend here. The percentage goes up as age advances, and 25.2%. The prevalence increases. The prevalence for mild cognitive impairment increases to 25.2% for ages 80 to 84 years. The data also suggest that the incidence for the development of dementia is 14.9% in individuals with MCI older than age 65 years, followed for 2 years. The guideline therefore recommends that patients with mild cognitive impairment exercise regularly as part of an overall approach to managing their symptoms. Although long-term studies have not been conducted, studies lasting 6 months suggest twice weekly exercise training may improve memory. And might I recommend to all, 5 days a week, 20 to 30 minute brisk walking. You're not going to jar your joints that way either. So there are currently no medications approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration for the treatment of mild cognitive impairment, and there are currently no high-quality long-term studies that suggest drugs or dietary changes can improve cognitive functioning in patients with MCI, the guidelines say. Look, there may not be very long-term studies for the dietary changes, but I was just talking about a ketogenic diet, right, for weight loss. A ketogenic diet may be the antidote to Alzheimer's and to mild cognitive impairment. We're talking about insulin resistance of the brain. We're talking about the brain not being able to utilize glucose properly. It's going to function a whole lot better on ketones. Ketones are the byproduct of lipolysis, which is fat-burning metabolism. This is our primary source of fuel. And this has been the big thing that nobody is really looking at. Over millions of years, our fat-burning metabolism, lipolysis, ketosis, has been our primary fuel. And only over the last 10,000 years, the introduction of grains, I'm talking about higher carb food groups now, when your body is no longer in ketosis when you're eating all those carbohydrates, right? That's when things really started to change, and especially over the last 200, 250 years, where now the food supply is not only diminished in its quality because of the lack of micronutrients in the soil like selenium, but all of these refined flours and sugars and these pro-inflammatory vegetable oils, right? But we know, and there is a lot of evidence, that a ketogenic diet with the inclusion of an MCT oil, a medium-chain triglyceride like coconut oil, can fuel the brain much, much better. So, as for cognitive training, they say, coming back to this article here, as for cognitive training, there is insufficient evidence to support or refute the use of any individual cognitive intervention strategy for MCI, the guidelines say. There is weak evidence that cognitive training may be beneficial in improving measures for cognitive function, and physicians may recommend cognitive training for patients with MCI. Well, of course, exercise is always a good thing. Yes, this is what we want in all of our patients, and not just those suffering with cognitive impairment, but it should definitely be part of a lifestyle strategy. I want to thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In, here on Intelligent Medicine. This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.